Guru Nation, welcome to episode 804 from the Random Musings of the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I discuss pre-screening and scheduling patients, specifically like the nitty-gritty, what it boils down to, what it actually means, how to do it at the site level. There's probably some interest here for everyone. I mean, it took me a couple decades to figure out and still learning because the platforms evolve, but I get into a little bit of what's going on currently with Yuma Clinical Trials. Check it out. Also, shout out to my sponsors, Inato. Inato is an amazing place where you can get studies for free. They do not get involved in the contract and budget component of your site. Everything they receive financially are from the sponsors. So their job is to make sure that the sponsors are happy with the sites and that vice versa, you are happy with their service. So check it out. You can't go wrong. Totally free. Link in the show notes. Also in the show notes, our other sponsor, Creo. I'm on Creo constantly. We just opened Creo to the CRA Academy because they have a reviewer, which is an EDC competitor that they rolled out to sponsors. So if you're a sponsor, they do more than just eSource and eReg. They do EDC as well. And if you're a site, they do everything. CTMS, invoicing. I mean, I'm on here almost every hour now of every day. I can't imagine running my site without it. Thank you so much, Creo. Thank you, Nato. Hope you enjoy this episode on pre-screening and scheduling. Really quick shout out to Alma and Annie from the CRC Academy for this very topic, because I got here, I sat down, and Daniel, the videographer, set everything up, and then Luis was on the CRC Academy, and I didn't have a topic. So I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do? And then I asked the CRC Academy class, shout out to CRC Academy, by the way, thecrcacademy.com. And Alma and Annie kind of said, hey, do you like a day in the life of pre-screening a patient and then scheduling them and how that whole process works, like the handoff from the pre-screener to the CRC. And my company, we have a startup. It's called Patient Ace. And one of the things we do is we run ads. So we run ads on Facebook. We actually run ads on TikTok. We run ads on Instagram. And they're not IRB approved because they're like generic ads. Like if you have depression, we have a couple studies for you. Or if you have obesity, we have some trials that might work for you. Click here to learn more. And then when they click, it's just basically a landing page and say, hey, fill out your info. Someone will contact you. So we get all these leads. Like it's not actually hard to get leads. What's hard is to get patients that qualify. And it's a lot of work that goes into that process because sponsors don't like it when you're just screen failing. And especially when you're screen failing for like simple reasons that you could have caught quickly during a very basic like pre-screening, some due diligence on the patient. So one of the things I started doing, and actually all of us at the site, Gracia, who's watching here on TikTok, all of us, Lana's who's kind of in charge of this, but she's out sick today, and Luis and Katie and myself, we all kind of take turns responding to the leads on Patient Ace, but also like sometimes the provider themselves, so the PI or the sub-I will give you a patient referral. And in those cases, you hope that the provider pre-screen them, but really, unless it's the PI, and even when it is the PI, you can't assume that they do because they don't know the protocol as well as you do. Like their providers, their job is to see patients and treat patients, and your job as the study coordinator is to know the protocol well enough to pre-screen somebody. So you learn basically through trial and error, because I'm not gonna lie, as a site director, site owner, slash study coordinator, slash pre-screener, when you go through a dry spell with a study, like let's say you go for a while and you don't get a patient referral, so you haven't had a screening in a while, and then you get a lead. You get super excited and you jump at the lead, and then you just get them scheduled. And then it turns out they don't work out. And then you do the same thing and the same thing and the same thing like three, four times in a row. Pretty soon the sponsor is going to say, hey, why are you What's your pre-screening process like? Like how is it, how can we help you? Why is it that they're screen failing for the same reasons? So a lot of times we're doing some psychiatric trials right now, and for psych's pretty complex, because if it's just like a depression study, they usually don't want other psychiatric conditions. So they don't want schizoaffective disorder. They don't want bipolar disorder. They don't want generalized anxiety disorder. They don't want substance abuse. They generally just want major depressive disorder. And if you pre-screen the patient and they're still trying to game the system, not saying all patients do this, because as a matter of fact, most patients don't, but you can find out more from the patient by asking them what medications they're on. Because if you know that you're ruling out bipolar and they start naming mood stabilizer as the drug that they're taking, you obviously are going to ask, what's the mood stabilizer for? And they're going to say it's depression. And then you're going to get back and say, well, unfortunately for this study, they only allow antidepressants, right? So you have to be on antidepressant because generally this mood stabilizer is not meant for depression. And then you'll get into a conversation and you realize that the patient actually has bipolar disorder with depressive symptoms. So that would be a screen failure in the case of 100% of our depression trials. That would be a good candidate possibly for a bipolar study if you had a bipolar trial, which we currently don't, but I know a lot of sites do. And this is why it's good to get multiple studies. And one of the TikTok Live people, by the way, if you're watching or listening to this later, I'm on TikTok Live right now before they ban it. Follow me there just in case they don't. They say, what's the best way to get a study in today's climate? It's just networking. I have entire videos on this, so just go to my YouTube channel and you'll see. I have like hour-long videos on how to get studies. But when you're selecting trials, you should select a wide variety of studies, because then you'll have a place for all the people that don't make it past pre-screening for one certain trial. They might be able to fall into another study. So you have to get into a conversation. A lot of the pre-screening that I do personally, like I know some patients prefer to talk over the phone. Lana actually does. All our coordinators do a good job of pre-screening. Like, I think they prefer more over the phone. Me personally, I prefer pre-screening them through texting. And I found that that's, for me, a lot more convenient. And in many cases for the patient, unless the patient wants to talk, like they'll say, hey, is there someone who can talk to me in more detail about this? Then we will have a phone call. But for the most part, when I've been doing it, I've just been having text threads. And the one of the other reasons why I like texting patients, and we do it through Patient Ace, which is a recruitment app. It's one of the companies that I co-founded with my partners Chris and Ronick. It's a whole portal. Like, it's an app, it's a website. You can export to Google Sheets, I believe, or like an Excel file. And it's really cool. I prefer texting pre-screening because then you have a document trail of what you discussed. So when you go in later to Creo, which is our database for also for pre-screening, Creo has its own way to pre-screen, which we're trying to figure out through Lana. She's leading that initiative. But Creo is our home for like where we put our subjects, where we put all the patients who may qualify or who are scheduled. Then I could go in Creo and put notes about the patient or put date of birth, or when they come into the office for actual visit, you don't need to ask them again, oh, you're on Wellbutrin. You already know from your notes, you're on Wellbutrin, right? Can you confirm the dose? And then it's like a better icebreaker. It also shows the patient that they're not just another number, that you actually know who they are, even though that you've never seen them before. So pre-screening is super important, and you're going to learn the hard way how to do it, because you're going to go through screen fails, and then you're going to realize the majority of our screen failures are for this reason. So let's try to figure out that first. Like, we have an obesity study with some cardiovascular outcomes. And one of the things we're looking for, there's a number of things, but any cardiovascular event like a heart attack or a stroke or a group of risk factors related to those things or heart failure. Those are things we need for the study. So now we're starting to ask those questions first on the pre-screening, right? Do you have any heart issues? That's like when I pre-screen for that particular study, that's what I start with. Like, thank you for your interest. Because usually I'm replying to a lead, right? Our ads do the work to get the leads in. Now you got to reply to the leads. And there's an art in replying to the leads. I know some sites use AI or chatbots. We don't actually do that. We do have one automated text in case no one's getting back to them right away. And it basically says something like, hey, one of us will get back to you soon. We've been swamped with leads. One of us will get back to you soon. We do run our own ad campaigns in-house, but it's outsourced through Patient Ace. But Patient Ace, which is my startup, we do run the ads ourselves. There's no one else we outsource it to. And it's built by research sites for research sites, which is one of the reasons why I love this thing. And we're still in beta testing right now for sites, and Yuma Clinical Trials gets the benefit from it. But if you're interested, reach out to me and we can get you guys started. But the art is now replying to the leads, and you got to know the protocol to some extent. You at least got to know like where most of the patients are failing. And once you start doing enough screenings, you'll learn, hey, the majority of patients are screen failing because of this, whether it's we can't find A1C high enough, or they're screen failing because of their medications that they're taking, maybe for their diabetes, or in the case of this depression study, they're screen failing because they also show positive for other psychiatric conditions other than depression or in addition to depression. So we try to get, once we learn the study and why people are screen failing, we try to get around that by asking those things first. And then it saves you a lot of time too, because you don't want to go through all this stuff and then ask these questions later, and where you could have just saved yourself like a long conversation, because it does take time and effort to text, even if it's text, like just texting people back. But again, some people prefer phone, and I honestly, my preference is text because it's more convenient for me. But if you've given yourself just an hour to reply to leads, and you don't want to be replying to texts 5 hours later, because one of the downsides of text is it's also convenient for the patient. So if you send a text now, you may not get a response until midnight, which does happen to me, but I'm the site owner, so I'm never like off the clock. It doesn't matter. And I'll reply back if I'm awake. But it's hard to replicate that, like to build the system, but eventually we will have like a dedicated recruitment specialist or a dedicated team of pre-screening, but that's how you do it. And then comes the art of following up, because what you don't want to do is schedule too far out in advance, because then the lead is going to forget that they even had this conversation with you. So you want to try to schedule the week that you have this text conversation, ideally like the next day or two. Because what I've noticed is the further you let time go between pre-screening conversation to actually scheduling the visit, the more likely the patients are to not show up. And auto text reminders, which Creo has, because as soon as we pre-screen them and schedule them, Creo takes over with the auto text reminders. But we only set it up for the day before to remind the patient. And a lot of times patients just ignore those things because it looks like spam. So one of the things I like to do is the day before the screening to follow up. Hey, just to confirm you're coming in tomorrow, let me know if you have any questions. I again emphasize whatever I believe that patient's objections were, or whether they're looking forward to getting paid, because like some patients do look forward to that and they want to just confirm that they're going to get payment for their visit. So whatever, this is again why I like text, whatever I can read from the text, I'll remind the patient about, hey, make sure you bring your medications with you. And a lot of the times the patients will say, yes, confirmed, I'll see you tomorrow. Sometimes the patients won't reply at all, which is kind of scary because you might be there ready for a screening the next day and no one shows up. So I started not double booking because I don't like to double book for the same time slot, but we will book more patients than we think will actually come. So like today, we scheduled 4 patients, 2 were screenings and 2 were existing patients. So we already knew the 2 existing patients would show up because they're in a study already. Like once you randomize in a trial, you're most likely not going to quit because the resistance, the hesitancy is kind of over. But screening is tough. Like it's not uncommon to get no-shows for screening, especially when you get into psychiatric trials, but really for anything. So from today's patients, we had 4 scheduled, but 2 were existing patients and 2 were screenings. And sure enough, 1 didn't show up. And the one that didn't show up was one that I texted last night. Hey, let me know if tomorrow, I'm going to put you down for this time tomorrow, but let me know if that's okay with you, if you can't make it. They never replied back. They ghosted me on like the last 3 texts. So I already knew it's very unlikely that patient shows up. But the other patient did. I sent them a confirmation text yesterday and this morning, and they replied to both of those, and they seemed to be really interested, not only in the study itself, but where we're located and how much they get paid. So I knew they would show up, and they did show up, and it looks like they qualify so far because they completed the screening visit today with Luis. So that was me pre-screening that patient. I think I did a decent job because at least they didn't screen fail at the first visit. So they at least confirmed to the coordinator what they confirmed to me through text. There was no voice exchange during this pre-screening. And this with this particular patient, my conversation went back and forth for about 20 minutes and seemed like he qualified. And then I scheduled him. So we use Creo to schedule page. Creo's everything for us. They're one of the sponsors of this podcast. I love it, but not only is it the eSource and the eReg and the CTMS, which tells me how much we've made and how much is outstanding revenue-wise, financial-wise, but it's also a patient system where it's like a database of our patients and it's a shared calendar for our site. So I went in. When I was scheduling time slots, I went to see who's coming in today, and I found a couple of time slots that worked. So then I already knew beforehand when I'm pre-screening patients, hey, I have this time slot and this time slot available. And that doesn't work for every patient. Sometimes they say, no, I can't do that. So with one of them, I actually put them for tomorrow, which is Tuesday. So that's one I'm going to confirm with again today before I leave. Matter of fact, right after doing this video, just to make sure they come in tomorrow. They said, no, I can't do Monday, but Tuesday at this time would be perfect. Okay, I got you for Tuesday. And then I pre-screened them as well. Basically the same questions. When you are pre-screening for one study, I do a lot of copying and pasting, at least the initial questions. Like, thank you for your interest. May I ask your date of birth and what antidepressants you're on? So if I'm replying back to like 10 leads on the same study and it's the initial conversation, I just copy and paste that. If I do that to 10 people, 4 might reply, 6 will ignore from ads. This is just strictly responding to the ads from Patient Ace. So 6, they don't want to do it anymore anyways. We'll eventually put them in our database because we could retarget them later for another study. But for this one, I learned enough. Let's leave them alone. The 4 that do reply, now I get customized with it because based on what they tell me or ask me, I obviously can't copy and paste. So then you get into 4 different text threads, which again, it's like could go on from morning to night. Some patients don't reply to 12 hours later. Other patients reply 2 minutes later. So you just, this is like whoever is doing pre-screening at a research site, if you're busy enough, if you have enough studies and enough ads going, it's a full-time job. Just pre-screening and scheduling. And that's technically what is an admin role or administrative assistant or a clinical research assistant. They're not a coordinator, but they're helping the coordinators. Currently at our site, we don't have this role. It's really me and everyone else, all the other CRCs sharing the duties of responding to leads. And then when a provider sends you a lead, that's more of a warm lead because you're getting it from a trusted source. And so you have something in common with the patient, and that is you both know their provider, right? And presumably you have a working relationship with that provider. So it's a little bit easier. There's more of a trust factor involved. And I found that when we're replying to ads on Patient Ace, there's a lot less of a trust factor. So you can't come across like too thirsty. Patients can kind of smell that even through text. Like they want to know, well, what's the catch? Because everyone thinks there's a catch. No one believes that they can just come in and get paid even if they don't qualify. But in research, it's literally how it works. Unless you come in and you don't even start the screening because you get screen failed right off the bat. But in reality, that should have happened on the phone or anywhere outside, anywhere besides in the clinic. So those are the tools we use. We either have patient referrals, which are good old-fashioned sticky note, call this person, or look up their records in our EHR, which is our electronic health records, and call this person. Or we have like patient ACE leads. So we're inbound leads that we're replying to, whether they're from Facebook or LinkedIn. And we also have patients that just stumble across our social media channels because we try to do a good job with Daniel and this TikTok stuff and Instagram where we create branded content for Yuma Clinical Trials. So we'll have some patients like messaging us on Instagram or email because they find our website and they ask questions. Someone's got to be in charge of that stuff. And really, you got to do it like within the hour. Like if a lead pops in your Patient ACE portal, you got to reply back within an hour. And this is why I think I need an admin, because our coordinators don't always have the time. They're with patients. Like today, I don't think anyone got back to any leads besides me because they were with patients all day and kind of putting out fires. But within the hour, you got to get back to the patient. And this is why the initial one is automated. It's, hey, we're swamped right now, but reply back if interested to learn more. That self-filtering can help you save a lot of time, but don't assume that just because someone doesn't reply back to a text that they're not interested, because a lot of people put their house number. Like people still have home numbers they use. And if you're texting a home number, especially you youngsters today, you may not know, they don't get the text. It's not a mobile phone. So I've found that a lot of patients who don't respond to text, it's still worth calling, either because that's their preferred method of communication, or it's a home phone, and they just never receive the text that you sent. So call as soon as you can, know the protocol well, know where the likely failure points are. Every study has them. There's no real way to be able to predict where the most common failure points are until you start doing some screenings. You can try to predict it by mastering the protocol. And from my experience, it just doesn't work. Every community is different. Every study is different. Every providers are different. And your situation may not be so obvious from just studying a protocol. This is why doing a couple screenings to learn the protocol, then you'll start to understand, okay, I need to start asking these things and do the pre-screening a little more intelligently. And then it comes to scheduling and then following up and reminders. And then I did an entire video on this. Once they screened until randomized, you got to keep communicating with the patient, because the patient may not know what's next. The patient may not know that they screen failed, because oftentimes screen fail doesn't happen on the spot. It happens later. Oftentimes they won't know that it's taking so long. Like, what's taking so long? It's been a week since the site talked to me after that screening visit. Oh, most likely I screen failed, or most likely I didn't qualify. When in reality, no, most likely the coordinator's busy and we haven't gotten all the results back, but no one's been communicating with you. So you don't want patients to like get discouraged during that screening window. Some of these screening windows are like 45 days between screening and randomization when they start the actual study. Some of them is like 45, some of them 60 days. So imagine not having any communication with that patient during that time period. Like, they might forget about you. They might lose interest. So I would keep weekly follow-ups with these patients, and simple just text or a phone call or however they prefer to be communicated with. You can ask them these things at screening. Hey, you know, we have a 45-day screening window. We'll try to be in touch with you every week or two. Reach out with any questions anytime. How do you prefer we contact you? They'll usually say, oh, text me or call me. It's fine. Just stay in communication with the patient. Because the worst thing is getting a patient successfully screened. They're ready to randomize because they qualify. But because no one talked to them for a month or 2 months, when it's time to randomize them, they forgot about you or they're over it. So weekly touch points, I think, between screening and randomize. And then once they're in the study, whatever the protocol says, so if it's weekly visits, if it's monthly visits, but weekly phone calls, figure out what works for that patient. Retention is very important. One of the questions on TikTok is, what are your thoughts on OOLs using websites so patients can do that at home? For instance, I'm not sure what that means. I think it's referring to decentralized clinical trials or pre-screening, like automated pre-screening. It works, but what I find is a lot of patients get intimidated by long surveys online and they don't want to do the work. So what we saw works best is a simple landing page, name, email, phone number. Then we send automated text. Someone will be with you shortly. We're just swamped right now with patient leads. That shows social proof to the patient, and that shows scarcity, that your time is limited as a site, but you're going to do your best to get back to them. It kind of builds some level of trust, but really the communication of the pre-screening coordinator or the admin or whomever it is, this is a very important process. Yes, you may need bilingual pre-screeners because, especially in our community, Spanish is huge, and Spanish only is huge as well. I would say 50% of the time. So there's a lot of like nuances as well that I didn't cover, but I think a lot of it's common sense too. Like, subscribe, comment, share, Guru Nation. Thank you so much, TikTok. Thank you so much for watching everywhere else and listening. Catch y'all later. Bye-bye.